Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we have a crisis in the city of Benton Harbor. Yes, we do. We have a crisis here in the city of Benton Harbor. We have a water crisis. And believe it or not, the people do not understand this. They do not want to hear this. They do not want to talk about this. It's just that bad. The water is so bad that you can't drink it. You shouldn't be bathing in it. And some of the schools that we went and tested was 40 times over the limit that you can have. We had houses that was over 100, but 100 ppb means that you could drink water if it's 10, if it's 9, even that's bad, but you could still drink it and not be infected by it. But we had several houses that was over 100. We had one school that was 460, and other schools that was at least 40 times over the limit, which is amazing. We went to the city council to report this to them. They were telling people that the water is good. You can drink the water because Whirlpool Corporation don't want the world to know that the water is bad here in the city of Benton Harbor because it won't bring in people from other parts of the country. If the water is bad, the people from the other part of the country will not come here. So that is one of the reasons why they're fighting so hard. And we got this mayor, the one that we put in office, we picked him up and put him in office, and he went bad on us. Marcus Muhammad was my friend. I always considered him my friend. He was always welcome at my house. But he's no longer welcome at my home. It's unfortunate that you would sell out a whole community for a few dollars. But the problem is, he don't know this, but when you sell out my neighbor's children and the people across the street children, you're selling your children out too for a few dollars. See, a lot of times they don't think on that level. They think everything is okay. I'm only selling out Pinckney neighbor children. They don't realize that they're selling out their children also. They don't realize that because sometimes you don't understand the process. And here's something important too. The school system was attacked maybe over 20 years ago. They attacked our school system. They planted the seed and watched itself be destroyed from the inside out. They allowed Whirlpool Corporation to give them a few dollars, and then Whirlpool was able to tell them what to do, how not to educate the children. And they're not knowing, they're so happy to get the money, because this money they can use for whatever they want, go out and buy them a car, whatever they need, they can do it, they can use it, and nobody would say anything. Because most people didn't even know that they was receiving the money. So I used to go to the school board meetings every time they had one. And I would also say, well, you don't need a corporation dictating to your community on how your children should be educated. To me, that make no sense. But Pinckney was crazy. They're here to help us. When have you ever known a bad corporation to actually help people? And then here's the thing. Whirlpool could have been a good neighbor. It's easy. Pay your taxes. If you pay your taxes, you don't have to donate if you don't want to. Just pay your taxes. Pay your water bill. But they're so high and mighty in their mind. And these people, see, when you miseducate our whole community, their minds become underdeveloped. And when you have underdeveloped mind, you get a Benton Harbor, Michigan. You see, they have 4,000 employees, Whirlpool has. Less, listen to this, less than 20 people are from the city of Benton Harbor. Less than 20 people. They don't pay taxes. What good are they? But we allow them to do whatever they want to do in our community. I don't. Everything they do, I fight. If I just had a couple of hundred more people from this area willing to stand up and fight back, we can win this battle. We can win. We can beat them. Banco almost knocked them to their knees. Almost, I said. Not quite, because they pulled the rabbit out of their hat. The heir to Whirlpool, Fred Upton, the U.S. state representative, went out and got them some tax breaks that saved them. Actually saved them from being destroyed. And I'm saying this because to me it's important, because we need to stand up together, you see. Now, listen to this. When we talk about how bad our water is, that is the best kept secret in the whole state of Michigan. Michigan is known for bad water. Flint, Michigan, you know, and how they were poisoning people. They were doing the same thing here in Benton Harbor. But the people here in Benton Harbor refused to stand up and say, hey, we're not taking that, you know. We're not going for that. I even had one person say, well, why are you picking on Whirlpool? I said, because they're not doing what they're supposed to do. They could be a good neighbor, but they're not. But we can force them to be a good neighbor. And here's the thing, they always threaten to move out. Well, let's get a team together and help them move, because they're not helping the city of Benton Harbor. They're not doing anything that would help the city of Benton Harbor. Not one single thing. So it's time that we change the way they do business. It's time that we do what we need to do and stand up and fight back. I tell you, I have a great show. Last week, we had one of our very best shows. And the listening audience all week long was commenting, making comments, sending me pretty decent emails. You're always going to get a few. But I like the thought. I like for them to email me. Good or bad, don't make no difference. You know, I'll email you back. I promise that. If you email me, I promise you I'll email you back. You can even call me a rat fink if you want to. Whatever you want to do, I don't care. Long as you listen and long as you reply. But let me bring in one of my good friends from Chi-Town, a national hero. A man who I admire, who I love, a guy who has some of the finest ideas in the history of mankind. This guy is really something special. Very, very good friend. Love him very much. And he got a story to tell. Let's listen to my good friend, Joe Pugh from Chicago. Talk to me, Joe. How you doing today?
I'm good, Reverend. How you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great, man. It's an honor and a privilege just to have you on my show, a guy of your caliber, you know, because we don't get guys like you too often. And I tell you, you are one special person and someone who I admire, I love, and also a worker. You see, we got a lot of people who can talk, Joe, but we don't have enough workers. People getting out here are getting their hands dirty out here on this battlefield. We need more folks to get out here on this battlefield and do what needs to be done, because at the rate we're doing that going now, it's not going to be a pretty picture. You know, it's not going to be a pretty picture. All we do is sit around and we talk all the time, and all this talking ain't getting us nowhere. But you know what I want to talk about, and an article you wrote, which was one of the finest articles that I have read in a long time. And the guy name is Jamel. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Jamel Robinson?
Jamel.
Robinson.
Was a 26-year-old father. He was a talented musician who belonged to a gospel singing group and played organ in the Chicago area churches. He was an armed security guard at many Blue Room Lounge in the suburb Robin, Illinois, and his ambition was to become a police officer. In November, after Jamal heroically captured a gunman who shot three people at many, a police officer arrived on the scene and shot him to death. Wow, amazing. Amazing. And I know you wrote the story, but tell us more about it. Let us know, well, you know, some points that you want to get across. I understand how important this story is because it's happening every day. When I get pulled over by the police, first thing I do, I put both my hands on that steering wheel. If I'm going to reach for my wallet, I'm letting him know I'm reaching for my wallet. If he want to go get it. But we don't want no accident. I know how they would do me. But anyway, talk about it a little bit, Joe, would you please?
Yeah, firstly, you know, I co-wrote this with my co-writer was Alan Harris. And actually,
Alan
did most of the hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, Alan, unfortunately, I had asked Alan, did he want to come on the show, but he wasn't able to. He had meetings he had to attend. So, but it would have been good if he was here because he literally did most of the writing, to be honest with you. He did most of it.
Uh-huh.
And although what happened was we both went out to the suburbs together and we investigated this case by talking to neighbors, talking to witnesses who were actually there on the scene. And we actually spoke to two of the shooting victims that were shot. Now, in the process of doing all this, I found out there was a very good friend of mine whose mom was an activist back in the 80s with me. And we had built a homeless union here in Chicago together. And it turns out he was a regular out there at Manny's Lounge. And we were able to get a lot of info from him. Actually, when I went to the funeral for Jamel, he was at the funeral. And this is a funny part of the story. When I went to the funeral, I realized when I looked at the you know, because this case is international. It's all known all over the world. Because mm-hmm. what you have is a hero. Here's a black man who was a hero who was literally gunned down by police while he stopped this shooter from killing more people. I mean, from killing anybody. He literally ran in the face of these bullets flying. Attacked this guy, shot him one time, shot the shooter in the butt, chased him down with bullets coming at him, got the guy down on the ground and was holding him there, you know. And but anyway, so when I went to the funeral, I realized when I looked at the obituary that I knew Jamel. I used to work with Jamel about maybe 5 years ago at Mount Sinai Hospital. I was the union steward there. He worked in the kitchen with me. And literally, I did not realize this, even though I saw the name and everything. When I looked at the you know how they have the pictures in the obituary, I looked at I said, oh my
yeah.
God, that Jamel, you know, and it really hits you hard, you know. It's a difference between oh here's some guy got shot on the news now, but this is somebody you know, somebody you work with, somebody who you know alongside of for pretty much every working day, you were with this person, right? And it's like it hurts that much more, you know. But I think if there's anything that I would want everybody to know about this case is that I think it proves more than anything that they're doing something different in how they're training police in America. And basically what it is, you look at this case, and it's even more pronounced here than in, say, the Philander Castile case. It works like this. Black man with a gun, it don't matter. Uniform on, whatever, shoot him. And what the police first did in this case, my first hearing of it on the news was they made a police statement. The police statement was, you know, that Jamel was ordered to drop his weapon, right, several times, right, and that because of that, that's why he got killed. So, in other words, it's his fault that he got killed. But, of course,
right.
Once we got out to the suburb of Robbins and we started talking to witnesses, it's a whole different story. They won't even release the name of this police officer. And by the way, there's been all kinds of protests all over the place about this. Because why would the let me give a context for this. We were speaking to some of the neighbors, like there's a house right there that the one neighbor lives in. He came out and was telling me that his grandma, you know, had caught most of it. He was saying that this cop literally came after everything was calmed down. He jumps out of his vehicle with this you know, like an assault rifle. It's a machine. It's like a semi-machine gun or something. And, you know, he runs in the bar. He points his weapon at the people. Black people are bleeding on the ground. They're bleeding. They've been shot. He point the one barmaid who was shot. She was hit behind the ear. She was grazed behind the ear. Said this cop jumped out on the bar and pointed this assault rifle. She could see the barrel of the gun right in her face. You know, the guy that was the DJ, he got shot. He got shot in the arm. He said, yeah, this cop was pointing at it. Freeze, you know, like, if you don't do what he say, he's going to shoot you. He literally just did not give any kind of a warning, is what witnesses were saying. And he pointed his gun at Jamel. Some people said he said freeze. Some people said they didn't even hear him say that. But he just began to shoot Jamel. Now, Jamel's holding this guy down on the ground still, right?
Right.
Put in context that this police officer comes from a whole separate city, from Midlothian. This happened in Robbins. The Robbins police are already on the scene. Robbins police are on the scene. They don't see the need to shoot anybody, right? Why would this cop, who just happened to be white, jumps out of his car and is hollering at everybody to freeze with this machine gun and then just literally just go shooting people and scare the hell out of the people who are laying on the ground bleeding that they're going to shoot him too? And the other thing that occurred is as he was shooting them, before he shoot them, people are hollering, no, 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 he's security. And one of the witnesses told me, they heard one of the Robbins cops say, oh, my God, where is this guy from? You know, he's not one of us, you know, talking about the other cop, right?
Absolutely.
And now with all the protests and everything that's been going on, now the police change their story, and they come on the radio again, and basically what they're saying is, oh, this was like a friendly fire, you know, mistake, right? You know, I mean, there's no other case I know of like this where a guy is a hero. He stops others from being killed, and his life in the eyes of these police is little of nothing. And they try to lie and say that he didn't have on his, any markings saying that he was security. Yet he had a hat said security, and all the witnesses say that he had on his vest and he had on his shirt that said security. You know, so you put all that together, and what you have is a situation where these police, if you look at, just add it all up nationwide, they are being taught, they are being trained to basically shoot first and ask questions later. And especially if it's a black man with a gun, you're getting popped, man. That's what's going on with these cops.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, one thing I know a lot about Robbins, and it's more of a family town than anything else. You know, it's a family town. And what was so amazing to me is that how these people think that they can continue to get away with this stuff. Just the other day, I was on the internet, and this white guy had held a guy with a knife, had a knife to his throat, getting ready to kill him, cut his throat off, you know, cut his head off. And now everybody was feminine. The only reason he didn't do it because everybody was feminine. And then the police came, jumped out of their car, and not only they didn't shoot him, they didn't do nothing to him. They started calling him sir, Mister. I'm sorry, are you okay? Are you okay? As they were putting him in handcuffs, asking him, is he all right? Not the guy that he had the knife on or anything like that, because the guy he had the knife on was black. And they wanted to know, are you okay, you know? And you're the one who had the knife getting ready to kill somebody. And he didn't, you know, they didn't shoot him. They didn't beat him. They just slowly put him in the car, put the handcuffs in the front, and put him in the car. And just, you know, walked him to the car, you know. I mean, amazing. Some of the stuff. And here this man was actually doing his job, more than his job, went beyond the call of duty, saved everybody in the bar, and he gets killed by police officers. And now they're trying to cover it up.
That's precisely what they put. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's obvious to me with this guy, Donald Trump, that we got in the in office right now, when he ran a campaign, such a racialized campaign with all that hatred, that, you know, it was pretty obvious they were trying to, you know, spin it back around on this racial thing, you know, that, and, you know, I mean, on that basis, people, I like to tell people, look, you know, it's in the interest of whites to really pay attention to this, because it's on the basis of this discrimination, this undue racial thing against blacks, that it ties you down too. It's on that basis that you're at risk at being homeless. You're at risk at starving to death. You're at risk at losing your job. You're at risk at all kinds of things. And by the way, you're at risk of being shot by the police, because number wise, I mean, in terms of number, actual numbers, they shoot like 2.5 times more whites than they shoot any, you know, others. I mean, it's the number one. But, you know, since whites are 60% of the population, blacks are like 14% of the population, I don't know what, you know, with other breakdown, it's just that percentage-wise, they're killing more of us. People need to understand that when they start this racial mess, that, you know, yeah, it's racial, but it's also, there's a class aspect to this. And that if they can get somebody dumb enough who's poor or homeless or starving to bite that bad apple, that racist apple, you know, all they've done is bite their own butt. You know, because guess what? Everything they're doing to these black folks today, they're going to be doing to you tomorrow if they ain't already
doing
it.
That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, you right there on point, my brother. You are, you're right there. And that's tremendous for people to know. And, you know, we don't get it. You know, we still out here boogalooing and all these other things. And the world is continuing to go around us. You know, I always talk about the water here in the city of Benton Harbor. You think people really care about the water being bad? One guy told me this. He said, "I know the water bad, but it haven't killed me yet." And I said, "Okay." I said, "It's eating your body up every single day." He said, "Yeah, but let it eat it up. You know, when it's time for me to die, just die." I said, "Well, rest in peace." You know, because it won't be long. His body already broken down to its lowest terms, you know. He probably was in his late 30s. It looked like he's in his 60s and everything. And but unfortunately, that's the way they think. You know, the people stay here. You know, the education system breakdown. We're one of the few public school systems that have a CEO, and nobody want to talk about it. Everybody figure it's okay to have a CEO in your community. Now your school is ran as a business. They don't care nothing about your students. Here's something else that happened here. They had the heat went out in the school system. They wanted them to continue to come to school, but wear your gloves and your mittens. You can wear them in the classroom with your boots. And then now who's gonna be studying in a cold room with your gloves on, your hat, and your boots and stuff like that inside the classroom? Because they want that money. They don't care about the students. That's the last thing on their mind about the students. Right. They don't care nothing about that. So that is so amazing. I tell you, you know, the story that you and Alan wrote for that newspaper was gigantic. And I've really been talking about it because it tells a story. And anything you want to add, you know, you can add whatever you want, and you got about 3 minutes to say whatever your heart desires.
Oh, wow, 3 minutes is a long time. I mean, I think I pretty much said everything. Is that, you know, I think that it's bad what's happening with the police, but I think the worst is yet to come. And I think the worst that is yet to come, you're going to see it as soon as the economy starts to take this downturn. It looks like we're heading into. They have no respect for anybody, especially poor people, you know, of any color. It's just that it's on the basis of attacking the black. It's on that basis they can attack everybody, you know, or the immigrant or the whatever, you know. And I would link it up with what's going on the border. I mean, come on, children now dying in custody of ICE. You know, when I see that, I think about a Trayvon Martin. When I see that, I think about it was about 10 years ago, a 10-year-old kid, I knew the young man, was killed by the police right here across the street from my house. Police shot him down because he had a, like one of those water guns. They said it looked like he had a gun. It was a water gun, for crying out loud. 10-year-old kid. Didn't ask no questions, just jump out and shoot him down. You know, you think about every kid, boy, here in Chicago. You think about Laquan McDonald here in Chicago. It's the same. It's the same. There's no respect for human life, no respect for humanity. But if you can tear somebody down for this racial thing or this immigrant thing, then, you know, guess what? And you allow it to happen, well, then you shouldn't have anything to say when they get around to tearing you down and bringing you down to that same level.
Amen. Well, thank you so much, man, for being on the show. And I tell you, you know, you're just a tremendous guy. You just keep up all the good work you're doing out there. So you're not just one of those talkers, you're a doer. And that, to me, is crucial. We got too many people talking. We got too many Facebook activists. We got all this stuff that, you know, we need them, though. Don't get me wrong. We need some of these Facebook activists, but we need to get out there on that battlefield. And Joe P. Reedy, love you, man. And you take care of yourself, and you have a wonderful day. And thank you for taking the time out and coming on the show.
You're welcome, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, then. That was my good friend, Big JoJo. He's one of my good friends from Chicago. And, you know, I'm born and raised in Chicago. And also got on the line, I got my good friend, Big Yo. He was my eighth grade classmate. He wrote a book. And it's such a tremendous book that he wrote. They classified him as a genius. But I'm gonna have to leave it there. According to this is what the book said, what the guy, when they wrote the article. This is Meet the Genius, who revolutionized payroll system could prevent future government shutdown. Retired postal employee Larry Pinson Sr. shed some light on the completed ancient system the government still practices today. The pay system used by the United States Postal Service and many other government agencies has become outdated in a sense that technology advancement of today is no longer compatible with the low pace practiced from decades ago. Unfortunately, the postal system of America has seen no change in the process that used in recording clockable hours and converting this employee to employee income. Larry Pinson Sr. took the initiative to create an organized system that can be better understood by the ones who are using it in his book, Chaps. He wrote a book also, Clockable Hours, Process and Pay System. He explained how postal employees are being paid unfairly on the current system, and it should be the case of the people who are more aware of how each hour of their work is being commissioned. He also includes information and explanation of non-scheduled days, part-time, flexible, overtime, night differential, leave, holiday, and much more. The best part is that CHAPS is not only limited to the United States Postal System. The government employees, the cities, and the county staff, teachers, police officers, firemen, public transportation, employees, as well as private sector business could benefit with Larry Pinson's proposal in an instructional book. It's called CHAPS, which is really a wonderful, wonderful book. And according to this guy, he said that Larry Pinson is a genius. But I got to say this. That's my good buddy. I got to bring in my good friend Shonda now. Shonda Parks from Chicago. We'll get to Larry. But I got Belinda Brown. I see you on the line also. I always got to talk a little bit with you. But let's bring in my good friend, my girl, Shonda Parks. Shonda Parks, are you there? Hello? Hello? Shonda? Shonda Parks? Shonda, are you there? All right. I'll get back with you then, Shonda. Belinda Brown, are you there?
Yes, I am, Pastor Pickney.
Hey.
You're having a great show, Pastor Pickney. Hey.
Yeah, I'm going to give you two more Belinda Browns, and I'm going to have to move on to my big friend, Big Yo. So it's going down, Belinda Brown.
Well, you're right, Pastor Pickney. I'm sorry, I have missed the show a couple of weeks, and you know, my daughter had surgery, and it really got us bogged down right now. But she's doing a lot better. She's recovering, and you know, Tasha, the doctor just got her on bed rest for like another 3 weeks. So that's been really hard on me with the kids and everything. So, but other than that, we've been doing good. And I haven't been able to listen in to the show, but today you're having a great show. You know, I was very sad about what happened to that security officer in Chicago, and it brought tears to my eyes because, you know, there he was saving other people's lives, and, you know, his life was just snuffed out on a, I consider it, it's a racist, blatant racist act. And the way Joe told the story, it was really good to hear him share that story so people can know the real truth about what really happened. So hello, Joe, if you're still listening, buddy, we need people like you out there that can really, you know, go into the trenches and get the real truth, so that people can know the truth, you know, and the truth gonna stand on its own two legs. At the end of the day, somebody gonna have to pay for taking that young man's life wrongfully.
Absolutely.
So,
you know, it's Belinda, see, what they don't understand, you know, they don't live forever. See, that's the biggest thing. People think that they're going to live forever. I can continue doing what I'm doing. I can continue to mistreat people. I can continue to do this and do that. And this is how they feel. They feel that they can continue to do whatever they want. And, you know, and it's going to continue just this way. Because this is how you got people that are starving, you know, and nobody seems to care. You got people who are homeless, and nobody seems to care. You got people who don't have clothing, and nobody seems to, well, I should say nobody, but certain people don't care who can afford to help these people. That's the bad part of it.
Right, and what you're saying about Whirlpool, Pastor Pinckney, you know, it all ties together because it's like, you know, when Joe broke it down and he said that because of the president that we have, you know, now running this country, you know, he didn't stimulated the atmosphere for people that's been wanting to do this kind of stuff all along and get away with it because really, you know, they've been doing it. They just haven't been as blatant with it. So, you know, when you think about when you started off your show, you know, talking about, you know, Whirlpool, a $1 billion corporation known all over the world, you know, the headquarters sits right there in Benton Harbor on Main Street, and they want a tax break, you know, while other people, you know, are suffering there, you know, the education system. You know, it's almost by design. So you have to take two steps back and wonder, you know, what is this really all about? You know, and you're right, Pastor Pinckney. That's why we need people like you. You know, because you know, I refuse to stay ignorant. You know, the Bible says my people perish because of a lack of knowledge, but it doesn't that we have to stay that way. So
absolutely,
my thing is that once you come into the knowledge, you know, it's time to do something, you know.
Absolutely.
And my thing is that's what you all about, Pastor Pinckney. You going to pin them down. You ain't going
right.
They may think they get the way with it, but they ain't get the way with it.
Oh, you can say that again. You know, one thing I want to say also, one of the things that I remember when you know, we were dealing with Marcus Muhammad, and I always remember You told me, you said, you know, he ain't who you think he is. You said that several times. And I said, well, now I said he would never defile Minister Louis Farrakhan. I said he would never do that. And those are my words. I said he would never ever defile Minister Louis Farrakhan. And sure enough, you know, if I would have betted my life that he wouldn't go against the minister, and sure enough, listen to me closely, sure enough, he's done bad.
But Pastor Pinckney, I knew it from the very beginning because, you know, I don't know, it's just something about me since I was a little girl, 5 years old. I knew that I had a real keen discernment on just to see right through people. And my thing was is that, and I know it's the spirit of God, because when I first met Marcus, you know, I worked in the Benton Harbor school system, okay?
Okay.
And he came up in there, and I'm gonna tell you, it don't take me long to spot a slick willy when you see one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what it was all about with him, is self. You know, I think Curtis Murphy, I don't know if you remember them or not, you know,
I
was all, you know,
Go ahead.
Yeah, Curtis Murphy, they was all sitting around the table talking about him and, you know, how, you know, he was really slick with where he was coming from, all, you know, and I can see how, you know, he was playing on the weakness of, you know, women and, you know, basically sticking his leg out there and, you know, waving his finger and blinking his eyes and all that kind of stuff. See, I watch everything about people's body movement, okay?
Yes.
I could tell he was not a real person. He was not a real person, you know, and he was looking for an opportunist. That's what he was, an opportunist. He was looking for an opportunity for him to get his own self, you know, self-service, and that's what he was all about. And he would play the game as long as he can. You remember when he came, when he tried to, even Pastor Pickney, I know you remember this, when he came to your house, okay?
Yeah.
With the Minister Farrakhan.
Right. Well,
okay.
I remember when he came, the minister didn't want him to be in there with me and him. And he asked Marcus asked me, could he come in and sit down with us? Because he never had that opportunity before. So I told him, why not? You know, that was my way of thinking. And that's when the minister told him to run for mayor. And he told him, he said, if you run for mayor and if you become mayor, will you take care of the people? He told him three times. He was sitting there.
Yes, he did.
And he told him three times. He said, and each time he said he would, and he was lying through his teeth. He ain't taking no
Pastor
care of
Pickney, but he sat there like a little mouse. He sat there like a little mouse, and like he was all, you know, in it. You know, he couldn't hold his head up. I don't know if you remember, he couldn't hold his head up. He held his head down. But the Minister Farrakhan, you're right, he checked him and told him, you know, he told him, he even asked him if we were going to be able to trust him, okay?
Yeah.
Because at that particular time, I had already told the Minister Farrakhan, we can't trust nobody in Benton Harbor.
Yeah. Absolutely. You said the magic word. But listen, Belinda, I'm going to have to let you go. But tune in next week and let's talk some more. I got to bring in my good
friend. Yeah, we need
Chicago.
To talk about what's going on down here in Louisiana, Pastor Pickney. Right now, I'm trying to get the indictment on the sheriff that was in office for over 30 years and seven judges, where they were all in cahoots with locking up black men and throwing the key away, you know, giving them life in prison on fabricated, concocted, fraudulent charges.
Absolutely. Hey, have you got a date for us to come down there and go to Angola prison?
Not yet. We're working on that date sometime in March, Pastor Pickney, so we should be finding that out probably right shortly after the new year.
I don't schedule nothing for that time. Also, I sent you Dorothy information, too.
I got everything. I'm ready to go. If you got anybody else that you know, anybody, you know, we really need some name, you know, some famous people. They want to go with us. You know, I want to go because we're expecting over 1,000 people to be there on a call out, and we're going to have the opportunity to address these people and help, you know, just really give them some type of encouragement, and that we'll let them know that we're fighting on the outside for them, Pastor Pickney.
Amen. Thank you so much, Belinda. I'll be ready. Just let me know when so I can schedule and make
all
sure
right.
that I'll leave that date open for you. And listen, you give the whole family a big hug and a kiss. Take care of your baby girl, and tell everybody I love them, and I hope to see them very soon.
Okay, we love y'all too, Pastor Pickney, and Happy New Year.
Same to you, man.
All right.
Take care now. All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was Belinda Brown from Slidell, Louisiana, and she's doing some magnificent work down there. She is really doing the work of a person that's out there. And look, we're doing great things, but we just got to get it all coordinated so we can get more people out here in the field doing the job. But let me bring in my good friend from Chicago. She's an extremely hard worker. She's out here doing incredible work. And it's my understanding she may have went back to Texas. She may not be in Chicago as of now, but that's my girl, Shonda Parks. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you so kindly, Reverend Pinckney, for having me on again. Pastor Pinckney, my goodness. I'm going to tell you, wow, I'm so glad you said my girl, because I've always thought of that. I've always had high respect for you. You have been a trailblazer, and those thoughts have always been carried with me, because I remember when I was in high school that you were a supporter of mine. So here we are all over again. Yes, I am back in Texas. I'm in DeSoto, which is a suburb outside of Dallas, and totally enjoying it. And Chicago really, really had stressed me out.
Chicago will stretch anybody out. Believe me, stress
yes.
is there in the city of Chicago. It's, you know, it's a lot of stress here in this little small community. Our problem is that we're not organized enough, and until we get organized, we're going to continue just the way we are now. You know, we're all over the place, and they understand that. You know, that's really one of our weaknesses. You know, we don't understand that, you know, there's strength in numbers, and we got to teach them that. But Shonda, I know you just wrote a book, and tell us a little bit about that book.
Okay, I'll spin that into exactly what you're saying right now, is that we are not organized. And I've been a part of many different organizations, Nation of Islam. I was very active with the Nation of Islam in a young part of my life, Pan-African movements, mostly everything that had involved the upliftment and the rise of so-called black people. But one thing that I noticed is that everywhere that I went, there was not a high level of respect for mothers. And mm-hmm. so when I would bring up the point of mothers and how important it was to guard the mothers, to set the paradigm for the mother in her birthing rights, this has been my motivation, is to rise the mothers, rise to the mothers, because my book is called Singing Like a Songbird. It is a storytelling color activity book. It's based upon creative expression. And my main character in this book, and which is in all of my stories, her name is Mother. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I go with mother is because, one, she's completely underappreciated. The mother, who is the one who brings life, male and female, into the planet, is totally disrespected. Because if people honored and knew the value, true value, of the mother in the continuous cycle, then the mother would be protected, because she is the one who brings in the bloodline. So, and how do we see that? Well, I'll tell you right now, the Europeans, practically has a 0% birth rate. Well, let's look at his history with his own female. What has he done with his mother? How has he treated his mother? And consequently, he has disrespected all mothers all across the land. Because if you respected mother, you would not create bloodshed. You would not create chaos onto a family. So I said that the mother, she's chronologically first by nature, because nature always protects that which brings forward life. So I just looked around, Pastor Pinckney, and in all of the organizations that say that the mother is important, and she is, that she's the first teacher. She's mm-hmm. the first government.
So if the if we're out of order, then the female is out of order because she sets the paradigm for the government and the order in our communities. So my depth of seeing this is like, how do you solve a problem? Well, first of all, you got to go to the root. And so
that's right.
How the singing like a songbird came. As a mother and a grandmother who has been 30 years active in bringing in new thought processes, upliftment, and for our people, I just had to sit back and say, well, somebody got to go back and discover our birthrights. And so lifting up the mother and bringing back our birthrights will help us in this evolution because you have to bring in a new thought. You have to bring in a new paradigm. So we keep bringing in these same old doggone thoughts that we have perpetrated over the last 58 years since we became African Americans. Because when we became African Americans, our paradigm shifted. So the mother is no longer important. And Pastor Pinckney, you know, you could bear witness, had it not been for your mother and in the help of what she brought forward to the Pinckney lineage, then you could tell a whole nother story today. Is that correct?
That is correct. You know, that's without, you know, without mama, I don't know where I would be, you know. And and I think that's one of the things that helped me grow, knowing that, you know, I treasure women. You know, those are something that's important. That also is the foundation. Whether we know it takes a man and a woman, but with the woman is the person that brings it all together.
Yes, absolutely. And you know the old saying, say mama's baby, papa's maybe. Why? Because you have to never question the mama. You always have to question. If there is a question, it has to be the question of the father because of the bloodline. So this is my creative expression. Singing Like a Songbird is a book where this mother, in fact, it's such a quick story. I orally tell the story because I'm a storyteller. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to briefly tell this story in less than 3 minutes. Is that okay?
That's fine. Go ahead.
All right. This is the story of a mother who desired to sing like a songbird. One summer, mother committed to singing songs and writing the songs that she had sang. Woo, she was so very excited about singing all summer long. Every day mother would sing. She sang when she cleaned. She sang when she exercised. She sang working in her garden, a place of peace. She even sang to her food before eating. Mother loved to sing. Singing, and singing, seemingly driving her family crazy. Every statement and names of everyone was a song now for Mother. She was no longer having regular conversations. She was singing everything. Her family appeared so irritated. They began avoiding Mother. Mother looked around the corner, assuring herself not to bump into her family because she felt the energy of what was going on. But the next morning when Mother awakened, she heard noises in the kitchen. This was very unusual for Mother because she's the first one in the kitchen. So quickly and quietly, Mother tiptoed to the kitchen, close enough just to get an earshot of what was going on. Oh, Mother could not believe her ears. Her family was expressing that they were beyond irritated with Mother and wished that things could go back to normal. Mother was so saddened and disappointed in herself, thinking her singing would never be appreciated. Mother, she moped around that morning until she found herself in her garden, where she found a bit of peace. Mother began singing, attempting to sing her blues away. To her own amazement, her voice sounds so beautiful. Now she began to feel the excitement and joy in her singing. Feeling good about her singing, she closed her eyes and she twirled around in happiness. It felt as if time had stopped. When the mother opened her eyes, to her surprise, there were birds everywhere in the garden. Birds sitting on the tree branch, sitting on the electrical wires, and sitting on the fence. Surprised by their presence, she stopped singing. The next moment, the birds started serenading Mother to show their appreciation for her beautiful voice. Hearing the birds loudly serenading, her family ran into the garden just in time to witness this extraordinary moment. It was at this moment that Mother and her family knew that she could sing like a songbird. Singing like a songbird.
That's all it. Right, girl. All right. Hey, all right, all right. How soon are you going to be able to get it out there?
Well, right now, if anyone would like to get this book, you can go to ShondaMParks.com, and that's ShondaMParks, the letter M, Parks, P-A-R-K-S, .com, and you can order my book online. This is a workbook. It's a teaching instrument so that, you know, we can all start to begin to understand that the key is storytelling. We have set our lives and our paradigms on books that are all full of story. The Bible, the Quran, and our lives have been set on stories. So today I have shared with you singing like a songbird.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It is, yes, it's a very wonderful book that teaches a great lesson. When I do my workshop with this book, I go back and ask the questions of the five W's. That who, what, where, when, why, and how, that 1H. I dialogue with people. We go through the book and we color, we paint, we get creative, we act it out, we do drama. I bring the stories in because everybody has a mother who sings, whether it's your mother or someone else. And mm-hmm. as annoying as it is, when it's not there, you're missing it. And, you know, but the sound of music and the sound of storytelling is how we told our stories. So
absolutely.
We have to get back to telling our story, because the battle that we're fighting on right now is not our story, it's his story.
That's right.
And so
that's right.
If we begin to start to develop and understand that we are the new books, the books come from us. We are the new writers for the future to tell the stories to the generations to come. And only when we become the book and orally dictate the book to one another and to our children will our stories be carried forward. So that's why we have books coming from you, my beloved, and because you have a story that is going to be sung into the universe for hundreds of years to come. And we thank you for that, and we thank you for your work as well.
Amen. That's amazing. Unfortunately, you're not going to be in Chicago on January 13th. I'm going to be on TV 21 in Chicago, the Clarice Mason Show. I'm going to be at 7 p.m. I'm going to let Benson and everybody else know the show will be on, and which is so amazing. when you think about it, because this is a very, very busy time for me, where, you know, I'm traveling a lot, I'm speaking a lot, and I'm trying to do so much work around here. Because what I'm doing around here, trying to teach people to become electricians, plumbers, carpenters, pipe fitters, bricklayers, I'm trying to change the narrative around here to show people to be able to fend for themselves, you know, to start your own business, get out here and do what needs to be done. And it's a process trying to tell people who are not business-minded to get out here and do what they do. So we're willing to train them, and I really do appreciate you. I know what you're saying, and I know that knowing you, how creative you are, and I think that's a beautiful book, and you played it all the way out. You know, people are going to be listening to this all week long. Usually when my show comes on Sunday, but it's on the internet and every place else, and people listen. That's really where I get most of my listeners. Really not really directly on Sunday, but all during the week, people will be listening to this show, and this is why my audience is so big, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate you. You know, you always been a hard worker. You conscious of what's going on around you, and there's so many things that you can do, and I appreciate you. Let's put it that way. I appreciate your talent and your willpower, that, you know, things that you can do, and your ability to teach. That is the number one thing in our community that we have to learn to do, teach one another. And if we can do that, we'll be successful. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And right back at your reflections. And I just want to say that when we came up out of slavery, then as emancipated slaves, we were given some things. And the female, they said that the female should have home economics. And that the man should have agriculture. But we have far been removed from those things, and it has not been by chance. It has been by design. Because mm-hmm. I can remember when I was a young adolescent, Jeanette, Merlin, Cindy, these, and you probably had this too. In high school, you had shop. You had electrical
right.
classes. The females had sewing classes. She had home economic classes. But we are so far removed from that right now. And so consequently, we cannot build, can't build a damn house by ourselves no more. We need other people to help us, and that's not good. I mean, we have builders, but this was commonplace. It's not that anymore. And we have few sisters who now know how to cook a proper meal for their family. This was commonplace, and that is not going on right now. So we have some real issues, and you are addressing those issues. And as a mother, as I progress, I'd like to address more of the issues that the female needs in order to hold up her part that nature has given to her. As a female, she has a part, she has a role, but because we're so out of nature of ourselves, we cannot identify with that role right now.
And you know, you're absolutely correct too. And it's amazing when you sit back and think about it, you know. And the thing that, you know, I see us as losing, we have lost track of reality. See, the glitter, the gold, and the bling bling. These are things that, you know, that we look forward to getting. And one of the guys in the neighborhood, he had these big wheels on his car, and was sleeping in his car. And I my mind just couldn't compute that. I said, why in a winter can? Do that make sense to you? And finally, he finally got the message. He went out and got him another car. Either that car got total or whatever it is. But now he's thinking about building more than anything else. And I tell you, we just had a graduation class for our electrician class and a sewing class. We had a sewing class also. But
wonderful.
You know, next year we're going to be even better. We just building right now. But listen, we only got 34 seconds. I didn't get a chance to bring in my main man from Chicago. But, you know, sometimes things get so good that you just can't let it go. And just to have you on the show, Shonda, I really, really appreciate you. And any time that you feel like you have a message that you want to deliver to the nation, you always welcome to come back anytime. And you
well,
know, that's not
love.
A say so. That's a promise. And I'm always gonna make time for you. And let's keep it moving. Let's keep doing all the wonderful things you're doing in the neighborhood. And here's the key word: stay focused. We can't get sidetracked. You see, that's a weapon that they use against us, you know. And we can't get sidetracked with all these other things that's going on around us. Stay focused on the future of our children. And on that note, Shana, I'm going to have to say goodnight to you. Big Yo,
good
I'm
night.
Going to get you. Belinda Brown, love you. Joe Perry, love you. Everybody on the line tonight, love you, and have a happy, happy new year. And don't let nobody spoil it, whatever you do. And on that note, good night, all.
Good night.